Hey, it's Rhett Matthew from the Cannon Fire Podcast, and I want to tell you about a great new sponsor. I tell you this, man, I love betting my friends, all things sports. I'll bet them on anything. Different games, player props, all of that is what the Kutt app allows me to do. Kutt, K-U-T-T, is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus U.S. states. Kutt has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments accepted, no need for Venmo. So what are we going to be betting on this week? NBA basketball is in full swing after the All-Star break. NHL has been making us a lot of money. Use our promo code BELEAVEBUCKS, B-L-E-A-V, BUCKS, B-U-C-S, for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code BELEAVEBUCKS, B-L-E-A-V-B-U-C-S. Kutt, put your money where your mouth is.
I want to hear cannons. Outfield, pop, ball to the five, touchdown Tampa Bay. Mike Evans does it again. Fire the cannons, Bucks.
It's first and goal. That's picked off. That's picked off. And who else? Rondé Barber. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers may ride to the Super Bowl with that one.
Third down, 18. Dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon. Those up on the
head. It's intercepted. Derek Brooks, 30. Brooks to the 29. He's 20. Gone. Derek Brooks all the way. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
And there the cannons go. Fire them. Keep on firing them.
Hello and welcome back, Bucks fans, to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast live on YouTube today. I'm your host, as always, Rhett Matthew, joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host from BucksNation.com, Mr. Evan Wanish. Today, we have got a very special episode for you. Not only have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers players started to report back to Advent Health Training Center for the offseason program, but we are getting ready to dive into all things NFL draft because we are less than 2 weeks away, Evan, and I know that this is like Christmas for you every single year, so excited to see what's on tap for today.
Yeah, it's honestly kind of crept up. Hard to believe that we are very, very close to the NFL draft. And typically it's like I'm trying to pull teeth, trying to freaking wait for this thing. And here it's, you know, like I said, it kind of crept up on us. So, very excited. And most of today's show is going to be about the draft. Obviously, the Buccaneers are back in the building. Not every single player. And like, let me just remind everybody that doesn't really matter that, you know, if some players aren't at voluntary workouts. So, but it is nice to see, you know, actual football, you know, guys being back in the building. So even if it is basically just you're working out just with your team instead of at, you know, your local gym. But the draft is here. It is obviously a very exciting time. The Bucks, honestly, it's a pretty important draft for them. I mean, it really is that you talk about building off of what they did last year. And we talk about the rookie class that they had last year with Kalijah Kansi, Yaya Diaby, both being, you know, great contributors. Cody Mauch, you know, sort of coming on towards the end of the season there. You know, you talk about those guys and it sort of highlights the importance, right, of the draft. Where would this Bucks team have been? Yaya Diaby led the team with 7.5 sacks. He led the team. So where would they have been without Yaya Diaby? Where would they have been without Kalijah Kansi? You know, would they have had even more question marks at the right guard position without Cody Mauch? So I do think even, you know, Trey Palmer, like he had to play an even bigger role because of Russell Gage's injury. So he had to become the wide receiver 3. So really their draft class last year was really good. I think it's important for them. And like, I understand no GM is going to hit 1,000. Like it is what it is, but it's important, I think, especially in your first couple of picks here. You have 4 picks in the top 100 with that extra third round selection that you got from the Carlton Davis trade. I think it's important to nail at least these first 3, right? Preferably you nail all 4 of your top 100 picks, but I think if they want to take that next step, right, from being, okay, you won the NFC South, it was a poor division, you won a playoff game, but then you lost to Detroit. If you want to take that next step, To maybe winning double digit games, winning the South a little more convincingly, maybe end up beating a team like Detroit, right? And going to the NFC Championship game. I think it's got to start. And look, and they've had a great offseason, right? Like we've talked about it. We're not going to go over free agency again, but like we all know what they did, right? They brought back most of the people, added Jordan Whitehead, added some depth in some areas. But I think you're going to get some key contributors here from the draft, as we saw last season. And like I said, when you're talking about making that next step towards being another tier of contender, I think it's got to start. I think it's got to start, in the first round next Thursday and then continue on.
Yeah, and you talked about hitting on the guys that are, outside the realm of expected superstars. You know what a first-round pick, if you have good real estate in the first round, chances are he's going to do well. You get the occasional bust. It happens every single year. But you start talking about reaching into the second and the third and the fourth rounds. Not only do you want to find guys who are going to stick around for your franchise, but potentially you could knock those hits out of the or those picks out of the park if those guys can come in and be contributors day one. Like Cody Mount came in and was a starter day one. Mm-hmm. It took Yaya Diaby and Kalijah Kansi a little bit further into the season to come in and really make their presence felt. But once they finally got past all the injury BS and locked themselves into the rotation, Yaya Diaby jumping JTS on the depth mm-hmm. chart happening during the 2023 season, once they got settled in and you got rid of those, I guess you could say a rookie hiccup, an awkward period. It's different depending on the position, but for guys like Yaya Diaby and Kalijah Kansi, last year they came in along that defensive line. They were a godsend. If those guys had played like that the entire season, much more people would have been talking about giving them their flowers for prospective defensive rookie of the year. But those day two picks, those day three picks that can turn into starters, those are the things that take a good draft and make it a great draft at the end of the day. Yeah. And Jason Light, especially these last couple of years, he's had some mid-round guys go out there and make it pretty big.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, you got to hit on your first round pick, right? Yeah. I mean, that is a must. And look, I mean, Jason Light has been good, but at the same time, you just mentioned Joe Tryon-Shuwinka, who Diaby jumped. Joe Tryon-Shuwinka, I know it was the 32nd overall pick. I know it's the last pick of the first round. But it's still not great for a first-round pick, right? Like, you want more production out of a first-round pick there. Vernon Hargraves didn't even make it through his entire tenure with the Buccaneers, and he was an even higher draft pick. So you need your first-round picks to hit, and luckily for the Bucs, their last couple, have been Tristan Wirfs and Kalijah Kansi. I know it's still early on Kansi, but the early returns look pretty good. So I just think you gotta be able to hit on that first round pick. And honestly, today's podcast, that's going to be the focus mostly is, their options in the first round and sort of, what direction they can go here.
Yeah. And another aspect that ultimately adds to the draft strategy for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you just talked about Joe Tryon-Shuwinka being picked in that 2021 NFL draft, 32nd overall pick in the first round. The Bucs were Super Bowl champions. The Bucs are no longer in that situation. You can look at what they've done in free agency, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more, and you can decide if they're in a position to take best player available. But when you are the Super Bowl champion of the world, you're literally in a position where you look at your team from last year and you're like, there's a couple holes, but we can take whoever we want.
Unfortunately, especially when they brought back team. They brought back everybody, right? They brought back Shaq Barrett. They brought back Lavonte David. They brought back everybody.
But the Bucs obviously not being in that championship window anymore, your strategy changes. You need a little bit more from these guys that you're picking on day one and even day two when you get into, rounds two and three. Those got to be big hits.
Yeah, and those guys are also, they're going to get more opportunity as well.
You don't want another Kyle Trask on your hands.
Yes. I mean, and look, That was that same draft. That was the Joe Tryon-Shuwinka draft, mm-hmm. Where I still didn't quite understand at the time because to me, just in my head, right? And the reason they did it, though, was because they didn't have many needs, right? Like, they didn't have many glaring needs, and you were looking at it as, the 32nd overall pick and Joe Tryon-Shuwinka. You're like, man, like, whoever they pick at 32 is pretty much a luxury, right? Joe Tryon-Shuwinka didn't even start in 2021 his rookie season because it was still Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul there. And I think that was their sort of reasoning with Kyle Trask is like, look, we might be able to get a developmental quarterback who's going to be able to sit for a year or two and like we don't really need much anyway. On the flip side, one of the reasons why I was opposed to the Trask thing was because, one, I wasn't the biggest fan of Trask coming out, and two, felt like a win now team, sure, you do have that luxury, right, of maybe not having as many needs, but I felt like a win now team needed to get somebody who could potentially help, right, if somebody goes down. I mean, hey, God forbid, you know, a guy like Chris Godwin tears his ACL late in the year and you need another receiver, or, you know, Tristan Wirfs goes down and isn't available for a divisional playoff game. Maybe you need another tackle. But instead, you had Kyle Trask, you know, riding the bench. So, yeah, but also, like you said, the Bucs are in a completely different position now than they were back then. And I would be shocked if you see any type of, you know, selection like that, unless it's just, you know, simply too good to pass up. But
yeah, before we dive into the draft, I did want to get everyone caught up on just a couple of headlines while we are talking about the pass rush, in particular, this defensive line. Will Golston will be returning back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for his 12th NFL season. It was announced yesterday he'll be back with the Bucs on, I believe, a one-year deal. Don't know what the number is on it, but it's going to be cheap. It has been cheap for Big Will the last couple of years, and that is just fine. But I wanted to pick your brain on this other guy, this new addition. Shaq Barrett leaves. The Bucs go out and seemingly find a cheaper replacement. At least this is my opinion of the move, in Randy Gregory, a guy that, you know, a lot of people may agree that his best days are behind him. He's been in San Francisco behind that stacked defensive line. What do you make of this? It's a $3 million base with up to $5 million, and I believe Shaq Barrett's making close to $7 or $8 million in Miami.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you are right. I mean, he's not. And look, like, he was never the player that Shaq Barrett was. So I don't really think it's fair. You know, people come into this season expecting Randy Gregory to have sort of the same, you know, impact that even Shaq Barrett, not even, let's not even talk about 2019
yeah,
Shaq
no
Barrett.
Way.
But,
no way.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. But
I was going to say, I don't know very many people expected over double-digit sacks for Gregory next year.
Randy Gregory's never had double digits in the season, so it's not going to happen at 31 years old, okay? I can tell you that. But what he can be is a solid rotational veteran guy who, like, I felt they needed. Like, they released Shaq Barrett, and they kind of didn't replace him at all. Now, I don't think Randy Gregory is a direct replacement to Shaq Barrett. Like, I don't think he's coming in and be like, all right, you're going to play the same exact role that Barrett did.
Right.
But I do think that it was a veteran presence that they needed. So now you're looking at their outside linebackers as, you know, Randy Gregory, Joe Tryshawinka, Yaya Diaby, Anthony Nelson. That's kind of the top four right now. And that's before the draft. I think they're going to draft an outside linebacker. So, like, in the first three rounds. Like, yeah, one of their first four picks in the first three rounds there is going to be a pass rusher. So I do think there's going to be somebody else added there. But, I mean, it's a fine deal. I just think, you know, sort of, to me, at this world, but it's almost like a guy who's like, they think like, okay, you know, he's good. Well, like, it is weird because it's normally those guys are like the, you know, guys that like were good a while ago, right? Whereas like Randy Gregory's like kind of been a bit underwhelming in his NFL career. But like I said, they need a veteran, so and it's cheap enough at a one-year deal, so I'm fine with the move.
Well, let's move on. Let's get into the meat and potatoes. Breaking down draft day scenarios, specifically first round scenarios, mostly for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll list off some of the top prospects you'll see as well on draft day, what to expect, and maybe in particular what position groups to expect. We are talking about the defensive line. We are talking about the edge rushers. So, Evan, let's hear what you've got. I guess we'll open up with you know, some scenarios for the Bucs if they ultimately want to stay put with the 26th pick in the first round of the 2024 NFL draft. So if they stay put, what's on the table here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the big one is kind of a mystery on how they feel about him, but the big one is UCLA edge rusher Laiatu Latu. You want to talk about talent? He might be the most talented pass rusher in this draft. However, there is, you know, significant red flags that could cause him to fall to 26. Like, that could be the reason. He actually had to medically retire from the game of football a few years ago. His injuries were that bad. He has a laundry list of injuries. honestly reminds me a lot of a few years ago, which coincidentally they actually both had to retire, and then had UCLA as part of that journey. But Jalen Phillips a few years ago, who was drafted, I believe, 18th overall by Miami. But had he stayed healthy, probably would have been maybe a top 10 pick, just in terms of talent. And I think Latu's pretty similar. He's a really good football player, but there are risks involved. So I don't know how the Bucks feel about that, right? There's going to be some teams that just do not like the medicals, do not want to take the risk. He did play this year and he did well. Like, and he's been healthy. But whenever you have to medically retire from the game of football, that's a big red flag, especially when it's something as important as a first round pick there. So, all the talent in the world, we'll see if he falls. He may not fall. Like, he may not. There, I don't expect him to be a top 15 pick, but I think, there's a few teams in front of the Buccaneers that could definitely use him. And I could see, teams like the Rams potentially picking him, especially, with Aaron Donald being out. I know they play two different positions, but I could see a couple other teams. I mean, I know, the Saints have a need at pass rusher, even though I think they're more likely to go tackle. But there is a few teams in front of the Buccaneers. Seahawks have a need at edge. So there's a few teams in front of the Bucks that could use him, and it wouldn't shock me if they picked him, but it also wouldn't shock me if he's there for the Bucks. Also wouldn't shock me if they passed. Like, I have no idea how they feel about his medicals. Like I said, there are some teams that are gonna have him high on their board and they're gonna say we feel comfortable, and there's gonna be other teams that say, look, we're not willing to take that chance. And I don't know where the Buccaneers fall on that. Some other options at edge, particularly, would be Penn State's Chop Robinson. I feel like he is very boom or bust. This guy feels like a guy who is either going to get you every year, like 3.5, 4 sacks, just as like a designated pass rusher, or he's going to be able to get you consistently, not, in the upper echelon of 17, 18 sacks a year, but he's going to be able to get you close to double digit sacks, 10, 11 sacks a year. And obviously that's a very valuable piece. I think there isn't really much of an in-between with Chop Robinson, and the sack production wasn't really there in college, but the pass rush win rate was, and the pressure production was there as well. So that's something where you're going to have to kind of rely on your coaching
Yeah.
and your development there with a guy like Chop Robinson, but you'd be taking a chance there too.
Well, like I also got to think that Jason Light can look at a coach like Todd Bowles, and he can hear feedback from guys who, honestly, like Jordan Whitehead, who left and came back and said publicly, Todd Bowles is a coach who knows how to get the most out of some of these guys. And I think Jordan Whitehead could be considered not boom or bust because he was good for the Bucks for a couple of years before he got signed up there in New York, but he just didn't have the same type of success under different coaching. I think with a project like Chop Robinson, just the pure speed that he's got is the one really exciting detail. The Bucks, I don't think, have had that kind of speed on the edge. Like Joe Tryon-Shoyinka is quick, he's twitchy, but sometimes he's too fast. He has a habit of running past the play. And maybe that's something else that could happen with Chop Robinson. Maybe that's a legitimate concern. But I think if you are Todd Bowles and you look at just the measurables alone, you got to be chomping at the bits to see what you can do with that guy if you can fine tune him and really get him dialed in. Because again, legitimate threat to be a legitimate threat at edge rusher in the NFL.
I mean, he does have the potential. It's just he's got to go to the right spot, and we'll see if Tampa Bay is the right spot. So, I don't think he's at like the very top of their board. Like, I don't think so. But I do think, excuse me, I do think he's going to be in consideration, at 26. So, and then another name I want to throw out. I don't think this guy's going to be there. I have seen some things, like I've just read online, seen a few different mocks about, this guy potentially being there, and I don't really agree with it at the end of the day. But it's Florida State's edge, Jared Verse, who actually would have probably been a top 15 pick, maybe a top 20 pick last year. They're elected to go back to school and now find themselves sort of in a similar boat, like a top, probably a top 20 pick. But there has been some thought that he could fall, to the Buccaneers. And again, don't really know how they feel about him. Sort of projects, reminds me a lot of Brandon Graham and up there in Philadelphia with the Eagles. It reminds me a lot of that. Sort of not a guy who's going to, unlike Chop Robinson, not a guy who's going to beat you as much with his speed. More of a Yaya Diaby mode of like going to beat you more with power. But he's a good player. And I don't know how high the ceiling is, but I think his floor is also pretty high. So I think he'd be going with a pretty safe bet there. I just don't know if he's going to be there. Unlike some of those mock drafts that I've seen that have him being at 26, had the Buccaneers selecting him at 26, I just don't know if I'm sold that he's going to be available there at that spot. So we'll have to wait and see. But as far as edge rushers in the first round, those are the three that I think the Buccaneers could consider. You know, there's obviously a couple of other guys like Chris Braswell from Alabama, probably more of a second round guy at this point. Braylon Trice, more of a second round guy. I know Marshawn Nealand is a guy who a lot of people like on the edge. Again, more of a second round guy. So when you're looking at edge rusher, I think in the first round, and a guy like Dallas Turner isn't going to be there. I actually think he's going to end up as a top 10 pick. But so I just don't think Dallas Turner is going to be there. And I think if you're looking at realistic options as far as edge rusher for the Bucs in round one, I think you'd probably come back to those three. And then, you know, move on to, you know, another position where, you know, I want to get your thoughts on those three first. And, but then I want to move on to a position on the other side of the ball that I think they could target as well.
Yeah. I like Chop Robinson, especially just because I talked about the prospect of him. Well, you talked about the prospect of him being a boomer bust player, but I feel like Todd Bowles, more so than the next coach, I know he gets his fair amount of slack every year, especially since becoming the head coach of the Bucs, but I feel like he can unlock certain guys like that. You know, the development of Kalijah Kancey, the development of Yaya Diaby, I'm hooked to see what happens with those guys this year, because I think the fact that they were so pro-ready last year, you got to give Todd Bowles credit, especially with the injury trouble beginning of the season for Kalijah Kancey. Yaya Diaby didn't start eating up more reps until later in the season. Like, that's 100% their development is on Todd Bowles. So I think with a project like Chop Robinson, just a freak athlete, like, that would be fun to see what they could do out there. But we've seen athletic players come into this system and not necessarily strive. So I do think edge rusher is the pick that I like the most at 26. I think first round, you know, when you look at this defensive line, I think a couple of people in chat already brought it up. The Bucs just lost their number one corner. And other than Randy Gregory, this defensive line is kind of the same. Like, it doesn't feel much different. We just brought Will Golston back for the 12th year in a row. Doesn't feel like he's going to come in here and save this defensive line.
It kind of feels like the 1200th year.
Right. So I think you have to continue to address this pass rush. And we're definitely on the right track with Kalijah Kancey and Yaya Diaby. But I don't think if you're the Bucs, you can head into this season happy with that defensive line, just assuming those guys are going to blossom and continue to grow. Because regardless of how good they were in their rookie year, they're going to have to be better this season, especially if they're going to be starting and getting much more reps for the entire regular season. I expect those guys to make more of an impact, but you need another impact player down there. I would like to see another guy that they can develop and make a staple on this defensive line for the next couple of seasons.
Right. And look, like, they have invested resources there, right? They have. They drafted Joe Tryon-Shewick in the first round, 2021. They went right back to the defensive line in 2022 with Logan Hall. And then they drafted the defensive lineman in 2023 with Kalijah Kancey. They have, you know, spent resources there. But, like, I don't care if you spent resources there if the resources haven't worked out. Like, I'm out on Joe Tryon-Shewick. Like, if he surprised me, he surprised me this year. I just don't see how a pass rusher in year four is all of a sudden it's going to click for him, right? Logan Hall, yes, we're going, you know, going into year three, but the early returns right now are not great. Like, it just, it looks like a average to below average defensive lineman. Just doesn't really make much of an impact.
Had his moments last year, more moments than he did his rookie season. Had a couple highlights last year.
He was playing a bit more last year, but
still, it, like you said, just doesn't feel like it's enough. Doesn't feel like it's going to be enough to build on, at least.
Right. So I. Look, I do think they need, and look, I wanted to bring this up too. Obviously, we talk about Pewter Report here a lot. We give them their flowers a lot. They do great work, but they did put out a mock draft, I think it might have been a week or two ago, where it was a 7-round mock, and they had the Bucs selecting Tyler Guyton in the first round, who is an offensive tackle slash interior offensive lineman, a good player, but they didn't have them take an edge rusher like at all in the first three rounds. And I can't do it. Like I can't do it. Because to me, you are just putting way too much faith. And I know we talked about, you know, Todd Bowles' ability to develop players and everything like that, whatever. But you're just putting way too much faith in a guy like Yaya Diaby to continue to develop. 7.5 sacks is a darn good rookie year. Like, and it feels like you're really putting a lot of stock in him continuing to develop and taking another step. And I just don't know, like, if he has the same exact year or a year quite similar to that, like, is this pass rush going to be any better? Like, probably not. Like, it probably – Randy Gregory isn't going to be making much of a difference there. It's not going to be a difference between – if Yaya Diaby has, let's say, 7.5 sacks again, you know, it's not going to be like Randy Gregory was the difference between the defensive line, the pass rush being underwhelming, you know, being good.
Well, and I think, you know, some more context to that scenario is if Yaya Diaby finishes the season with 7 or 7.5 sacks – and he leads the team again, then I think we'll have a pretty good idea of how the pieces around Kancey and Yaya Diaby, you know, what his supporting cast looked like. Because last year, again, we talk about one hell of a rookie season, but 7.5 sacks led the team. And like that's concerning. It shouldn't be like that, especially from a rookie of all people.
And they did, and a lot of people bring up, well, they had a lot of sacks as a team, and they did. But why did they struggle against really – why did they struggle? Why did Jared Goff consistently tear them up, right?
All year long. Why did they struggle to get to the quarterback without running any blitzes? You know?
And why did they struggle to when they faced good quarterbacks? What happened? You know, like C.J. Stroud, Josh Allen. Like, I understand I'm naming very, very good quarterbacks. I'm not naming slouches here. But look at some of the quarterbacks you got on your schedule. You play Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert. I mean, you know, Kirk Cousins now, like, sure, like, he's not those type of levels, but he's better than Desmond Ridder. You know, like he's better than what Atlanta had last year. You know, Derek Carr shredded them in the game that the Bucs could have won the division because the Bucs couldn't get a pass rush, and the Saints offensive line was terrible last year. So if the Bucs, again, and we talk about why I opened up the show, taking that next step, being able to take that next step, a part of that is being able to get pressure on these really good quarterbacks and affecting them in multiple different ways. So I do think, you know, edge is definitely, you know, before we move on to another position, because edge isn't the only position, but I do think edge needs to be a top priority, if not the top priority.
Yeah, just real quick, quite frankly, I don't think Desmond Ridder gets the recognition he deserves for helping the Bucs make the postseason last year.
Oh, my God. Dude, he was terrible in that the Atlanta game in Atlanta. Oh, my God. I mean, he wasn't good. The Bucs beat themselves the one in Tampa, too. But, if it was for him, the Bucs would have gotten blown out in Tampa if he wasn't so bad. And then, yeah, in Atlanta – oh, man, if he's, like, average, I don't know if the Bucs make the playoffs because they probably lose that game.
It's a shame that, you know, he was so...
He's going to be missed.
Yeah, he had such a rough season as the starter for Atlanta last year that he was catching strays from Raheem Morris in the opening press conference. Like, that's when you know it was generationally bad quarterback play. So, Desmond Ridder, we do thank you.
Yes, thank you for your contribution to the 2023 Buccaneers. Yeah. Still better than Kyle Trask, but all right, let's move on now. I want to go to the other side of the football because I do think that's the other most likely scenario for round one, and that's the interior offensive line. There's mostly two guys. Oregon center Jackson Powers Johnson, who you're going to hear a lot about. I do think the Buccaneers like him. We'll see if he's there, and Duke. I'll say offensive lineman Graham Barton because he's playing tackle, but he really projects as a guard in the NFL. Can also play a little bit of center. I mean, this guy can play probably at all five positions. Jackson Powers Johnson is more of a prototypical center. But obviously, you know, look, the Bucs Ryan Jensen is officially gone. You know, he is not, he is retired. You know, he is officially out. So the Bucks, you know, whether they feel comfortable with Robert Hainsey, who knows, right? I mean, to me, I don't think Hainsey showed you enough. And I think if they get the opportunity to draft a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, who could immediately, day one, we're talking about getting contributors, day one, he is your starting center. Like, he will be your starting center. And the interesting thing about him is I actually, it's more the days go on, I think there's more of a chance that realistically that he is available at 26, because it just seems like his stock has sort of been lowered a little bit. And a guy like Graham Barton, it actually seems like is less likely to be available at 26. His stock is going up. So those two guys I would look at along the interior. Like I said, Graham Barton can play just about anywhere. Would guess he probably is more likely a guard in the NFL, but he'd be a pretty darn good option there for the Bucks too. So I think when you're looking at it, I think the trenches in round one would be the way to go. I do want to discuss a few other options that I just want to throw out there, but those two guys, I think when you're discussing trenches, you know, definitely make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like the move at center because it just, it solves those problems day one. If you get a Jackson Powers Johnson in there and he comes in and, like you said, day one, week one, he is your starter. You go into camp, you develop him as a center. It's a foregone conclusion that he's going to be your guy, and then you've got a guard spot to fill. I just feel like that's a much easier solution than, you know, obviously Robert Hainsey and kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of offensive lineman purgatory right now. We don't entirely know if he's going to be a starter next year, what kind of role he's going to have. And then you talked about the Duke offensive lineman. You know, is he better fit as a guard? Is he better fit as a tackle? Can he play a little bit of center? I'm sure he can do all three, but look at what happened with Luke Getteke. You know, he's brought in, he's a starter at guard, and he was so bad they switched him to tackle. I don't think the Bucks are in a situation without Tom Brady at quarterback now to wait and see what happens. Not to say that they were in a situation before to wait and see what happens, but I don't know why, like, the reserves on the offensive line felt a little bit different in that 2022 season than they do right now. I think you could find a better use for more guys fighting for that guard spot than, you know, trying to figure out who your center is going to be. Because after two straight seasons of starting, it's not going to be Robert Hainsey. That's for damn sure. So I think, you know, the beginning to solving the rest of that puzzle at the offensive line in the interior is going to be to just lock up a center. I don't care who it is, but I would like to know who my starting center is going to be by the end of training camp. You know, by that first preseason game, well, I'd like to have
if they select Jackson Powers Johnson, you'll have your right. Yeah, you'll have your answer next Thursday. But
there you go.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and the thing is, like, we talked about what they did with the pass rush. They didn't do a lot on the interior offensive line for Hainsey either. Like, they brought in Ben Bredesen, they brought in Sua Peta, like, it. Like, they let Aaron Stinney walk, Nick Leverett walk, like, they didn't really do a ton. So, like, again, it's like sort of like, yeah, like, okay, you got more depth at guard, but like, were you kind of just more so replacing guys, you right. know? And that's where, you know, I do think it's interesting. And I think interior offensive line is definitely going to be on the, you know, definitely going to be on the table. Isaiah, really quick in the chat, says, which one are you taking first, Jackson Powers Johnson or Graham Barton, if both are available? I want to start by saying I don't think both will be available, but if they would, I would still take Jackson Powers Johnson. I just think he's has the higher ceiling. I think he has the potential to be one of the top centers in the NFL, you know, in 2-3 years time. Graham Barton, I think, has the potential to be a good player. I put a value on getting a potential blue chip, you know, player. And the only reason I think he'd be available, Jackson Powers Johnson would be available, you know, at 26 would be, there is some slight injury concerns with him, but also, like, just it's a center, you know, like that positional value just isn't the same. And of course, our good buddy Willie Beam in the chat says center Cedric Van Pran Granger is a viable option for round two. He's the center from Georgia. So yeah, he makes a lot of sense. There's a couple guys, you know, there's a lot of interior offensive linemen here, and I'd be surprised, just like I said about an edge rusher, I'd be surprised that the Buccaneers aren't walking out of this draft in the first three rounds here with at least an edge rusher and an interior offensive lineman, no matter where that is. I think two of their four picks are going to be at least that.
Yeah, I think you have to. And you also talked about that blue chip mentality. Jason Light spoke to the media not that long ago about the type of player that they look for to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And that's one of the things that he said he feels like he's gotten much better at doing since becoming GM of the Bucs back in 2014. Between his first draft and now, he feels like he's got a much better idea of the character of player that he wants to come into One Buc Place and be a part of this organization. So I do think that on top of having, you know, a certain character to bring to the table, there's that certain blue chip, glass eater mentality we've heard to it referred to as before. And I think Jackson Powers Johnson, I'm excited about what he brings to the table. I just think that, you know, of those interior offensive lineman prospects, he's the guy that identifies the most to me as what would be a Jason Light guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, there's actually a lot of them in this draft. So yeah. I'm interested, especially along the interior of the line. I'm interested to see, how they approach that. But I do want to, before we head out, which I want to end it with a hypothetical question. But before that, I got to mention some other people. Cornerback is an option. I'm not going to say it's not. I don't think it's as likely as edge or interior offensive lineman, but it's an option. Khalil McKintry is a big name that I know a lot of people have looked at. It's possible he's available at 26. You see guys like Nate Wiggins from Clemson. I don't know if he's going to be there. Terrion Arnold from Alabama, I don't think is going to be there. And then the real wild card here, probably a guy like Cooper DeJean from Iowa, who is kind of a Swiss Army knife back there in the secondary. Like, he can play corner, play safety. Like, there, I think it's all going to depend on preference of team. Like what does that, you know, team prefer? Like, where does that team see him? I think that's going to affect his value as well, because if they see him as a corner, I think his value rises. If they see him as a safety, I think his value drops a little bit. So I think he could be a wild card for the Buccaneers there at 26, and it'd be an interesting option. I wouldn't completely rule out secondary. I know there's been some people talking about, like, oh, wide receiver, or I can't really see it. And also, like, interior defensive lineman. We talked about edge, interior defensive lineman. There's just, like, yeah, they just brought back Will Golston. I do think they might add an interior defensive lineman at some point. I just don't know if it's in round one. Like I said, unless somebody's there who they don't expect to be there and they pick them, like, that's completely possible. I mean, you know, you never know. In 2017, you know, the Bucs weren't expecting O.J. Howard to be available when he was, right? They weren't really thinking they were going to pick a tight end in round one, but he fell, and that's what happened. So you never know, but I wouldn't bet that they take an interior defensive lineman. But, and linebacker, I know some people are going to ask about that. Just not a great linebacker class. Just not something you want to draft in round one. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. As far as round one options go, that's pretty much that.
Are there any guys that you would say are on your wish list who you definitely wouldn't expect to be there, but if they end up there, it's one of those picks that, like, you waste no time. You take this guy no matter what. I'm sure there's a couple of names, obviously, but are there any realistic options you've thought about for the Bucs? Any particular position groups? Like, wide receiver. Is there absolutely no wide receiver prospects that would really wow the Bucs at 26?
Realistically, like, because obviously Marv isn't going to be there, Malik Nabers isn't going to be there, and Rome isn't going to be there. So other than that, like, Brian Thomas Jr. maybe, like,
hey,
but, like, other than that, I don't
just
know.
Just a Gators fan, not biased at all. Is Ricky Pearsall a first round guy?
He could be.
Really good pro day, really good combine.
I'll tell you. I mean, another guy who could be a similar role, Ladd McConkley or whatever from Georgia.
Yeah,
pretty good player. But yeah, I mean, probably both of them are probably second, you know, day two guys, but. Maybe the Buccaneers could pick one of them day two. Who knows?
I know we're going to get into your hypothetical and we're going to wrap this thing up, but another hypothetical I just want to pick your brain on. What do you think of these theories that have started to surface ever since Baker Mayfield posted a workout photo with one Scotty Miller?
Yeah, while we're
on the topic of small white receivers.
Yeah, Jordan Whitehead returned, and now it's Scooter's time. So, yeah, that's going to happen. I mean, at this point, you know, a lot of teams are going to take the stance of free agency. I'm not saying that the Buccaneers are going to actually sign him. It could just be that they are legit, maybe just friends. It's possible, right? A lot of these teams, I think at this point, are going to be like, all right, let's see how the draft plays out. And then I think, sometime in May, you might see a little bit of a flurry, with teams making some moves in free agency, because, now they know exactly where they stand, right? They're not really focused on the draft anymore. The draft is, in the rearview mirror, and now they know exactly what they have, what they need. So I could see a little bit of a flurry there in free agency. So, we will see the return of Scotty Miller. I'm not counting on it, but you never know. He's a legend in Tampa, man. I mean, that play in the NFC Championship game is like, you want to talk about iconic plays. Like, sure, you can mention the Super Bowl, but man, that's right up there. I mean,
That's
that is
yeah.
it. Without that play, I don't know if they win that game. That was such a giant momentum shift. And I mean, I know the Bucks were up at that point anyway, but like, just like the shock value of it, I just think that just stunned the Packers. And there was no coming back. Once that happened, I was like, all right, like, they're gonna win.
Yeah,
Like, there was no doubt.
hearing the players talk about it, most of the locker room most of the team headed into the locker room at halftime already believing they're going to win in the NFC Championship game. That was one of those moves that, again, just immortalized that entire game, but that moment in particular. You think back to that playoff run. I think about the Scotty Miller touchdown. I think about the Devin White interception against the Saints, to kind of seal the deal on that one in the second half of that game. And then obviously all the plays in the Super Bowl, but I don't hate it. We didn't have a lot of great things to say about Scotty Miller when he was making his way out of Tampa Bay, but we also didn't think Russell Gage was going to last a collective two drives either. So it is what it is. I'm open to a reunion. My arms are wide open for Scooter to come back home. What do you got to wrap us up here, Evan?
Okay, so this and I, this is going to, I think, spark some debate, because I do think there's going to be people on both sides. I really do. A question for you and a question for the chat. Would you trade Chris Godwin to the New England Patriots for the 34th overall pick? Assuming the Patriots are picking what Jalen, Jaden Daniels or Drake May, right, in the first round. They didn't get their wide receiver. They need their wide receiver for the young quarterback. The 34th overall pick is the second pick in the second round. Would you trade Chris Godwin to the New England Patriots for the 34th overall pick? I,
Now,
you know, it, you instantly you'd be like, oh no, like, I think it's close.
instantly.
Like, he has a year left. Like, I don't think it's a slam dunk.
No, and that's what I was going to get to, is that instantly you're like, oh no. But let's be honest, big Chris Godwin fans here on the show. I think his days in Tampa are numbered simply because of the contract, simply because of Mike Evans finally getting, that big contract. It's tough to field a room of wide receivers on a team like this with payroll set up the way that it is. It's hard to be paying two wide receivers north of $20 million, and that's what you're doing. I think Godwin is due, what, $23 million this year?
Yeah, and the number could rise based on the year that he has and the cap rising again. So,
I think if it gets them out of that contract, and if you go into this with a wide receiver that you really like in the first or second round, that's the only thing that would kind of confirm it.
yeah,
Like,
I think
you have to walk
you're
away with his.
trading you're trading Godwin, and you're picking a receiver at 34,
Yeah.
or you've already picked a receiver at 26. And then you're doing that.
Exactly.
I don't know if the Patriots would do it. And by the way, I don't think the Buccaneers are playing this. I haven't heard anything about this. This is just a completely hypothetical thing. But I do think it's worth a discussion.
Yeah, I do think it is definitely worth a discussion. Again, we always bring up Pewter Report, but there was an article they had floated out there a couple of weeks ago begging the question, could the Bucs trade Chris Godwin? Because more than one NFL analyst has said he could potentially be a trade target for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because of that contract. Now, is it likely that it happens? No. The Bucs love Chris Godwin.
No,
I'm
yeah.
sure that they would love to have him here for at least one more season, whether they are able to figure out that salary or not. But I do think when you talk about strictly value. You talk about delaying the inevitable here. I think it would allow the Bucks just a lot more breathing room, not only to come away with a replacement at potential wide receiver two right. or three.
A guy on a cheap yeah. 4-year contract. Like,
and then you free up all of that money for next year. So I'm hesitant to say yes, but I will say yes. I take that trade. As much as I love Chris Godwin, as much as I would hate to see him go, it feels inevitable because of the Mike Evans contract.
Yeah, I also thought that, you know, when Mike Evans signed that deal, I was like, okay, like, it's not impossible because they have been doing it for a while, but I'm like, I don't know if they're going to elect to, you know, pay Mike Evans and then they paid Mike Evans a second time. Are they going to elect to pay Chris Godwin on the second time? I don't know.
And then let's look at the situation, you know, the Bucks are going to be in next season. You look at all of the different places they're going to be throwing their money around. The quarterback position, the offensive tackle position, the safety position, and the wide receiver position. I'm not a betting man any more than I used to be. I have a gut feeling that for free agency next year, we're going to talk about the Bucks potentially wanting to get some help on the defensive side of the ball. In particular, I have a feeling next year is maybe going to be the year that sets up the Bucks to spend a little extra money on a free agent pass rusher. Now, this is a year from now. This is totally hypothetical. I could be way off of the mark, but that's what my gut tells me. And that kind of, I guess, just factors into everything. Like, I think the Bucks are going to be in a situation where you're going to have tough decisions to make with Chris Godwin hitting free agency. I just don't think you're going to be able to pay him and then fork over the money to go beef up another position when you're already paying Tristan Wirfs as the highest paid tackle in the NFL and Antoine Winfield is the highest paid safety.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, I don't think it's going to happen. It's something that's been on my mind. I was like, I think I would do that. And like I said, I don't know if New England would do it. Probably not. But I think if I was Jason Light, I would call him and I would offer it. So because I think it would be beneficial to the Buccaneers. Like I said, it's not that Godwin's not a great player. He is. But we talk about, the future and just building this thing up could make sense. So really quick, you did mention Antoine Winfield Jr. I wasn't even going to mention this because it's really nothing, but Adam Schefter again did say that there's, you know, more progress being made on a long-term deal for Antoine Winfield. At this point, I would be, and this isn't Schefter saying, this is me, but at this point, I would be surprised if by that, I think the deadline is July 15th.
Yeah, I think you're right.
For a franchise tag to, you know, get a deal done. At this point, I would be shocked if they didn't get a deal done by July 15th. So I don't know if Tristan Wirfs is going to get his deal done. I mean, I don't think you have to worry about that. I just don't know if that's going to happen before the season. But Antoine Winfield, it sure seems like that thing's going to get done. And I think it's going to get done probably before July 15th. Yeah. I think we're going to see that. But, you know, before, you know, maybe even before June, maybe in the month of May, who knows?
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. Jason Light even stood on business last week, and he said that he has a pretty good track record. When he says, I'm confident a deal will get done, a deal usually gets done. So he feels just as good as anyone else that a long-term extension is going to be made possible here with Antoine Winfield Jr. at the safety position. Tristan Wirfs, the verdict is still there, or the jury's still out on what that long-term extension could potentially look like if it does indeed happen this year. It could not. You know, there's still a chance that it doesn't happen. Like, let's not forget that he's not a free agent until next year. So we're good. The Bucks will be picking up his fifth-year option unless they pay him a long-term extension. So some hiccups, some things to be figured out, but between Tristan Wirfs and Antoine Winfield Jr., almost 100% certain one of those two guys is going to come out of this offseason with a deal.
Yeah. Brutalized Bucks in the chat says, just because Baker doesn't use Godwin doesn't mean Godwin isn't legit. We're not saying that. I did not say that. Godwin is a good player, but that wasn't really the point of the trade. It wasn't like, oh, the Bucks don't use him, so get rid of him. It's a financial thing. It's just a team building thing. It's, you know, you got some great years out of Godwin. You get an asset and you move on. You bring in the next group, you know. That's just sort of how these things go. Like, if you have a chance to add a young, cheap receiver, you know, who, okay, won't be what Godwin is now, won't be what Godwin is now in 2024, but what about 2025 and 2026? Like, we don't even know if Chris Godwin's going to be on this football team in 2025. So I think, you know, if you were presented with that trade, I think you'd have to strongly consider it. I'm not saying it's because Chris Godwin is bad. It's nothing to do with Chris Godwin's talent. It's just the financial and more of a team building thing. And look, like that 34th overall, that's a legit asset there. Yeah. Like that is that, like I said, I'm not even sure New England would do it.
Yeah, day two pick, especially 34, in my opinion, as a Bucks fan, seems a little rich for Chris Godwin. It does.
Yeah.
It does. But it's good value for the Bucks. And again, from a team building perspective, here's another thing too. All things considered, I am surprised this is not an issue the Bucks have had sooner, because the 2024 season will be the eighth season that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin have played together for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which is insane, because the first couple of years that we had these guys, you know, when Chris Godwin really started to break out around 2018, 2019, yeah. I'm like, there's no way we're going to be able to keep both of these guys in this wide
receiver. I thought Godwin was going to be the goner. I was like, Evans is going to be here, and like, they're not going to, like, Godwin will have his fun here, you know, for a few years while he's on his rookie deal, and then that'll be it. But they've managed to keep them both.
They've managed to make it work. It's been a fun wide receiver room to watch, but it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out. Moving Chris Godwin, not 100% out of the question. Is it likely? Probably not. But you do have to beg the question of what kind of situation the Bucks are going to find themselves in a year from now financially, and that could make it a more necessary move. But, Evan, any more thoughts here before we wrap this thing up?
No, not much. This isn't our last show before the draft. I also have some videos. I've been doing profiles for the draft prospects on Bucks Nation, so we'll have some videos over this week and then leading up to the draft next week on some guys that I've profiled. And we'll also have, you know, definitely at least one show, probably two shows before the big day. Before the big day next Thursday, like I said, it's creeping up, and fun times are here.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but the big day is next Thursday, as you mentioned, round one of the 24 NFL draft. Are we doing anything live, or are we just hanging out watching the draft?
I'm just hanging out watching the draft, because I would usually have people over. So unless you want a bunch of people in the background, not really. Well, you know, yeah, whenever I'm, you know, I have all the hats there sitting and just waiting which one I'm going to put on, you know? Yeah. Buffalo Wild Wings sponsors it. It's, you know, it's really a good time. But maybe Rhett, maybe you'll be. I don't want to put, now I'm putting you on a spot. We're going back. Maybe Cannon Fire Podcast will be live. I mean, I know the machine, Mr. Bucks Nation, will be live streaming for 7 hours or whatever he does, but yeah, I mean, I know he'll be live, but maybe we'll see CFP live.
Oh, did you call him the machine?
Yeah.
That's a new one. We've had a lot of nicknames for James over the year, but that's the first time I've heard the machine.
Well, yeah, well, I can't really, you know, PG show, so I can't really say, you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's just about going to do it. Should be some live content between now and, of course, the start of the 2024 NFL draft, but that's going to do it for today's episode. Find the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show and, of course, Tampa Bay Buccaneer news as it happens. Speaking of Bucs news as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram at Bucs_daily. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL. And check out his written work at BucksNation.com. I know you said you got some draft profiles coming out. Anything else at all here over the next couple of weeks?
I am actually covering the for the website. I'm doing the, I think it'll be out, should be out Wednesday. It's either Wednesday or Thursday morning, the full first round mock. That's for everybody. So I will be doing that for Bucks Nation. So stay tuned. Next, like I said, I don't know the exact day. It's either going to be Wednesday night, it'll be published, or Thursday morning. I'm not sure, but stay tuned for that. I will have a first round mock draft, not just for the Buccaneers. I'm going to be doing it for the entire first round. So I'm really excited I get the opportunity to do that this year.
Looking forward to it. Should be a good one. Last but not least, you can find myself Instagram and Twitter at Rheticus, Rhettakus, if you follow me I will follow you back, but that's the show. We will talk to you guys soon with some more coverage of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Rhett Matthews, signing off from my co-host, Evan Wanish. We'll talk to you in the next one. Until then, and as always, thank you for listening, and go Bucks.